This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Plenty to break down as we welcome you into the second hour of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Welcoming in our VSiN and DraftKings Network audience, Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. The Masters is in the rear view. The NBA postseason is ahead. So much to get to news and notes wise as it pertains to the NFL and the draft that is upon us in just over a week. Michael, what was your best part of the weekend? What was your favorite thing that you saw, whether it was Masters or NBA?
Well, it was all Masters for me. It was the Masters. I flipped to the 76ers. Once I saw Embiid wasn't playing, I'm like, if they don't care enough to play him, then why would I care enough to watch? So I switched to something else, you know? Anyway, I thought it was fun. The Masters, Vern Lindquist's last Masters tournament was tremendous. Listening to them all talk about his experience, 40 years being on that course. Sometimes he did 15 and 16. Sometimes he did, 11. But for me, the way they run the tournament, the rules and regulations they have. I was reading where, Zach Robinson, the quarterback on the brain, but one of the winners wore his jacket on the Regis show and with jeans and got yelled at for doing that. Like, there's so many protocols that you have to go through. And the fact that what was fascinating to me, Stormy, is I kept looking at the crowd saying, there's not a phone on the course. Like, all these people are actually don't have a phone there. Like, that could be probably the largest collection of people in a world setting that doesn't have a cell phone on their bodies. Think about that.
Yeah.
And the way they run the tournament is just great. And Scheffler, to me, is just an incredible human being. He just reeks with kindness and competitiveness.
I did love that feature that they did about the Masters jacket, though, and like how you get it for a year and all of the different rules surrounding it. And speaking to the phones, super funny because Scheffler obviously was continuing to be peppered with questions about should his wife Meredith go into labor? Are you really leaving? Are we really believing that? And he said, somebody has access to a phone. And he's like, I don't know if I should say that, but yes, obviously he wins his second green jacket in 3 years, shoots 11 under for the tournament, 7 birdies in the final round. And he is playing as good as anyone can play the game of golf right now, won his third event in his last 4 PGA Tour starts and is just on a tear right now, so much so that not only does he win the Masters as a plus 450 favorite, but as we look ahead to the PGA Championship coming up next month, he's a four to one favorite. So that the numbers and odds on him pre-tournament just continue to get lower, and you see why.
Yeah, well, he's dominating the sport. I mean, he's like Tiger. He doesn't have the same kind of momentum that Tiger has, but I think people recognize the talent and the ability to play under pressure. I think that's the thing we all lose sight of a little bit. And, Morikawa talked about it a little bit. He was trying to get greedy out there, so he took some chances he didn't have to take, and he's going to learn from it. Yeah. But I think ultimately Scheffler, he doesn't really ever panic. And he was able to kind of, even though he missed a couple putts, he got himself back on track. And like he said to Nance in Butler Cabin after the tournament, I finally hit an iron on 9 that was conducive of how I played in the past when he got it about 2 inches from the cup. And then from there, it was really over with. I mean, the only hole he bogeyed was 11 because he kind of went far to the right after Morikawa went in the water. It's just remarkable how these guys play the course every year and it comes back and bites them when they don't need it because they can't handle the pressure of the moment.
I did want to ask you real quickly because there's been some conversation about the PGA Championship coming up and that because Scheffler will be a first-time father just a couple weeks into having a new baby, if that's a reason not to bet on him for the PGA Championship, if like that's the time he's a favorite, stay away. Fade away because he's going to have a lot of life changes. What do you remember about having your first child in those first couple weeks?
Obviously they are life changing and they continue to be life changing as you go on and you become proud of it and all that. I think to me, the way he focuses and concentrates when he is doing what he does, I think that would be something I would not want to bet against, but certainly he's going to celebrate this. I wonder if there's going to be some kind of respect or tribute to the tournament itself and the naming of the baby, right? You know, I'm not saying the baby's going to be named Masters, but, you know, you want to see what they come up with here because, you know, this is a second green jacket. And, you know, I would make sure that whatever gift I would send Scotty, I would think I would send him the Caddy's jumpsuit for the baby's first outfit.
I love that. Maybe August, short for Augusta, something like that. Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? Yeah. That would be fun to monitor, though. Also, because you mentioned Vern Lundquist and him, you know, doing his 40th and final Masters broadcast, the shot on 16 of Tiger standing there and him in the background was just so awesome to see two legends of the sport for their, you know, respective jobs. That was really, really cool. And like the meme that has now gone around the world where he's behind the tree shaking his hand was really, really fun. But okay, let's turn the page here.
Really, really good. No, it was really good. I mean, just incredible. And I think Vern was so humble when he said, this is Scotty's moment. Let him enjoy it, even though it was his last tournament. Now, that's the kind of human being you want to be around.
Yeah. And everybody talks about Vern. It's not just the words that he says and uses throughout his broadcast career, but the moments when he does lay out and let the moment carry it. And, you know, another great example of that, let Scheffler have his moment. Let's turn the page, though, to the NBA looking ahead, because we do have the play-in games that are coming up over these next couple days. And you already said this might be the biggest game for Philly ever as they head into the play-in.
I don't think it might be. I think it is. I really think it is, because as a lifelong 76er fan, there's no more excuses. You can't say Embiid's not healthy. He is, right? You can't say he's going to be better next year. You know, he will be. You know, another year on that body, who knows where he's going to be. So if they can't beat Miami and secure the seventh seed, okay, and then get an opportunity to play Milwaukee, who's 17-19 since Doc arrived, and they know Doc better than anybody, and Milwaukee with Giannis not being 100%, it's a great opportunity, right? They can play Milwaukee. They have the size to match up to them. So this game on Wednesday night, to me, is probably as big a game as the Toronto game that went around the circle that Kawhi went in and won the game for them. I think this is right where it is, because what's going to happen this offseason, because then if they lose the game, they got to play Boston. And they're not beating Boston. I don't care what JVT says. They're not beating Boston in a seven-game series. There's no way. There's just no chance. They're not mentally tough enough to do that. So that being said, they'll go into the offseason, and they have basically Embiid under contract, and that's it. Harris, a free agent. They'll sign Maxey. Oubre's a free agent. What will they do? Now they have to reconstruct the team. Now the process is officially over. You're going to have to reconstruct the team. Are you going forward with the big fella and believing he can stay healthy? Good luck. Good luck with that. I don't believe it. You believe it? So I think this is a huge, huge game. And 4.5, I'm surprised the money hasn't come back in on Miami, because Miami, when they play them, they just out-tough them.
The Eastern Conference game set for Wednesday, but again, to Michael's point, the 76ers, a 4.5-point favorite, total 207. We've got the Hawks and Bulls in the other play-in, Chicago laying 3, total 220. Your 76ers 7-1 in the Eastern Conference. And then real quickly here, your biggest surprise maybe of the way that the seeding shook out, anything surprise you?
Not really. I thought, to me, you know, Cleveland admitting that they wanted to lose so they could avoid playing Philly. Are you kidding me? Like, who wants to do that? Who does that? But I thought, you know, it went Oklahoma City. It deserves it. I think they're a young team, Stormy, that has we'll find out a lot about them when it comes time to play within, you know, against these teams with experience. So we'll see what happens there. But you know, the last weekend of the NBA season was a little bit, you know, it was, I think somebody sent me, there was 263 games that were finished in this league this year by over 20 points. So there's so much between the regular season that I think we have to kind of dismiss what happened in the regular season and kind of handicap when the players are going to play all the games.
All right, Michael, every day here in the offseason, we ask you, what's on Michael's mind? What's going through your brain this morning?
Well, I think today's a really historic day, right? And I think it's historic in a lot of ways. Branch Rickey, the former general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, he broke the color barrier by signing Jackie Robinson. And today's Jackie Robinson Day. As you know, Stormy, all Major League Baseball teams are not allowed to give out the number 42. It's retired throughout the league. And this is a great tribute to a great man who had to endure a lot of hardships to be the first African-American to play baseball. And we know how great that Negro League was and how many of those players were unfortunately not allowed to play. And I think the way they, the National League, the way Major League Baseball honors Jackie Robinson and his contributions to the civil rights movement here in the United States is tremendous. I wish the NFL would take hold of this. I think I wish they would look at some of the players that were unfortunately misguided. And I wrote about Kenny Washington in my new book, Football Done Right, one of the great players who played alongside of Jackie Robinson at UCLA. And when they were done playing in their final game at the LA Coliseum as two seniors at UCLA, when Kenny went off the field, he got the biggest ovation. And Jackie was a great, great baseball player, a tremendous baseball player, and a tremendous football player. And so was Washington. But Washington was a big physical runner. And unfortunately, because he wasn't allowed to play in the league, he couldn't. He went to play at the college senior game in Chicago. George Halas invited him back, but they weren't drafting African-American players. And so they had to play in these semi-pro leagues, and he got himself hurt with two knee injuries. And by the time he came back to play, he wasn't the same player. So Jackie represents more than just baseball. He represents an awareness. And I think that is so important about Jackie Robinson Day.
Yeah, and while his number, as you referenced, is retired throughout the league, through the 15 games that we're going to see on tap today, every player will be wearing that number 42, and it's just such a cool visual. Dating back to 1947, it's crazy to think about. Like, that was a year before the military was desegregated. It was 7 years before public schools being segregated was deemed unconstitutional. So the impact that he made, not only in sports, but around the country, around the world, he says, a life is not important except the impact it has on other lives. One of the great Jackie Robinson quotes. Very, very special day in Major League Baseball. No question about it. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line as Michael has a few talkings too that he needs to give and step into my office next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time, we at VSiN are offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds. Every 5 minutes, you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match that public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage, though. This offer is just for a limited time. VSiN.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2-week access to VSiN's betting splits. And because I messed up my tease so bad, it's time for Michael to share some words of wisdom for those in need and step into my office. Roll it.
Appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk, winger. Step into my office.
It's Step Into My Office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
All right, Michael. A certain San Francisco 49ers wide receiver did what a lot of players do when they're unhappy or want more money. Unfollowed his team on social media. I'm talking about Brandon Ayuk, of course, who's headed into the fifth and final year of his rookie deal. While it was reported Ayuk initially did request a trade from the team, his agent came out, quote tweeted that report and said, you need better sources. If you were talking to Brandon Ayuk in this situation, how would you direct him to negotiate and navigate things here this offseason?
Well, I mean, he's got the world by the tail, right? They picked up your fifth-year option, Brandon. So that means you've got a fully guaranteed contract on your fifth year. You've coming off your best season by far. You've improved your yards per attempt by 5 yards. Think about that, 5 yards. You know, you averaged 13 yards per catch in 22, and they're up to 17.9 in 23. Tremendous season. If you put another one of those seasons, you're getting an opportunity to feed off of the Justin Jefferson contract. What you don't want to do here is sign too early. Jefferson's going to be the leader. He's going to be the guy running the race, and he's going to get over 30 a year, and he's going to pass Tyreek Hill. And so the next guy, whoever he is, always benefits from that. It's like the wind shear at the Tour de France. You want to hide behind the leader of the pack and kind of let them take the wind on. Let this contract get done by Jefferson and then just sit tight and then let the 49ers react. And you could say, well, okay, if they draft a receiver, I could be out. No worries, you'll be a free agent next year, and some team will pay you even more money. So there's really nowhere you lose in this scenario. We know there's 16 or 17 receivers making over $20 million. That's not your interest. Your interest is, can you get closer to Davante Adams? Can you get closer to Tyreek Hill? Can you get closer to Cooper Kupp in terms of average per year? That's what you have to work on, and patience is a virtue. Yeah. Just sit tight, do your thing, and everything will work out.
Set to make $14.1 million this year, coming off back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, and as you referenced, a career-high 1,342 this past season. While he did not officially request a trade, somebody who did, T. Higgins, told reporters at a youth football camp over the weekend he does anticipate playing for the Bengals in 2024. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler followed this up, reporting the Bengals have made it clear behind the scenes they have no plans to trade him either and want another run at a Super Bowl with Ja'Marr Chase and Higgins on the outside. How should Higgins handle the rest of this offseason, knowing he'll likely play on the franchise tag?
Well, I think he took the first step in understanding what team he works for. As I've said many times, you're not forcing Mike Brown to do something Mike Brown don't want to do. And I know Katie Blackburn Brown runs the team and she's the president and Duke Tobin's the general manager, but Mike Brown's fingerprints are all over this team and his negotiating style is all over this team. What Mike Brown says Mike Brown's going to do. Just ask Jesse Bates. Remember, he was going to hold out and miss the whole season and he twinkle-toed in there at the first week of the season to get his franchise contract. I think, Higgins, you're in great shape. You're going to be 25 years old next year. You're a number one receiver. You are going to get paid again. You're like Ayuk. You're going to get money, and all you do is need to ride the wave of let Justin Jefferson, and some team's going to have you on top of their board next year. And maybe they'll franchise you, and you'll get angry again, but you're going to be making in the middle 20s at that point. So I think all you do is just continue to have a great season. Continue to do what you're doing. And you're going to be in really good shape because you have the ability to change the game. You are truly a number one receiver. Frankly, if I were in the draft and I was going to pick a receiver at 15 or 16, before I made that pick, I'd call Mike Brown up and say, you want this? I'll take Higgins off your hands.
The tag this year worth $21.8 million fully guaranteed. Let's head to hoops. And OKC head coach Mark Daigneault, his group secured the number one seed in the Western Conference on Sunday for the first time in more than a decade. The Thunder upped their win total from 24 to 57 over the course of 2 years under his tutelage. But they're also the youngest one seed in the postseason since seeding began in 84. How should Daigneault attack this postseason run for a young team that's never been there before?
Don't ever talk about age. Don't talk about young teams. Don't talk about age. Everything's a blank palette. It starts a new season, and how we play now is going to be what we do. Don't talk about we're young. Don't talk about inexperience. Don't talk about anything other than just play our best. We wrote about this for the Daily Coach today, and I think it applies to the Thunder tremendously. Pat Riley, when he was coaching, he brought a 2x4 into the locker room, and he laid it on the ground. And it was 12 feet long and it was 2x4. And so Riley got up and said to the players, you think I could walk across this 2x4? And they said, yeah, how hard could that be even at your age? And so Riley just danced across it, no problem. He said, well, what would happen if we raised it 20 feet in the air? Would it become a hard thing to do? Yeah, of course. Well, why would you not be able to do it 20 feet in the air if you could do it on the ground? Well, fear enters into the equation. So what Mark has to do is eliminate fear. And when you start talking about age and you start talking about inexperience, you're letting fear into the building. You're letting fear come into the equation. Keep the 2x4 on the ground. Let them really learn how to walk. And if we fall, we'll pick ourselves back up. But we have too much talent. Too much talent. This isn't about inexperience. This is about playing at a higher level.
And a great line, by the way, in his latest media availability, when asked about his team's youth, he said, we might have a young team, but I think we have uncommon people. The Thunder 7-1 to win the Western Conference, despite being that one seed. The Nuggets +135, Clippers 6-1. Let's go back to the NFL, where Minnesota Vikings general manager Kwesi Adofo-Mensah told reporters recently, it's not just getting the quarterback right. It's getting the quarterback right and the team around it. I don't think you want to necessarily go take huge swings and not be able to build a team around them. The Vikings currently sit at the number 11 pick in the NFL draft, but could trade up to get the quarterback of their future. After losing Kirk Cousins this offseason, as many predict they will, should Kwesi and the Vikings reach for a quarterback like many expect or focus on other needs?
Well, I think he's got the right attitude. And I listening to his quotes and talking about his team building, I think Mensah is completely right. You want to have a good team. Look, Justin Herbert's a fabulous player, one of the best players in the league, but he can't get the Chargers to win. It takes a team. It takes everybody doing what you have to do, and you've got to be good in the offensive line. You've got to be good in the defensive front. You've got to have the receivers. You've got to have a young quarterback. So I think the work really is asking yourself this. If we take a quarterback, what does our team need to look like to make him most successful? That's the teams that succeed, is when they buy into the player that they draft, they fix him. Look no further than Mac Jones, right? Mac Jones' first year in the league played decent. Mac Jones' third year in the league was horrendous. Right. What was the difference? Well, McDaniels played to his strength, coached him, really helped him out. They built the team around what he could do. They didn't let him do things he couldn't do. He didn't run the team at that point. He was trying to run it in his third year. To me, that's the key. And I think ultimately what happens is you draft these guys so high, they think they become the team and they get too much pressure on them. And I think what you have to do as an organization is build around them and take the pressure off them.
The Vikings right now, plus 125 favorite to be the landing spot for former Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy. And while the Bears and Commanders are all but sealed up to be taking quarterback, we talked about this a little bit earlier. The Patriots could be questionable. There's been speculation surrounding this team about potentially trading down. Jerod Mayo is in the office today. What should the Patriots do with the number 3 overall pick to get his era started off on the right foot?
Well, I think ultimately it comes down to your ability to evaluate the quarterbacks. You know, if you don't think you can get a quarterback that can come in and make a difference at 3, then you could certainly take a left tackle who could make a difference on your team and move forward. Now, you know, your owner is going to have to be patient with this because this is the hard thing to do. Because the hard thing to do is if you don't draft a quarterback, it puts all the pressure on you to make Brissett a better player, to then find the quarterback somewhere else. Because I don't think Robert Kraft thinks he's going to be picking in the top 10 next year, just listening to the way he talks and about how that they've gotten rid of Bill. Now they can fix all the other problems. So, you know, one thing I've learned about the NFL is, you know, owners and owners own all the footballs. And they can talk a really good game about being loyal and being with you. But once the season starts and you start losing, all of a sudden, you know, that doesn't go as good. The patience tends to end. And a lot of pressure comes down from the media. So you're going to have to figure out a way to get patience and fix the team. And I think the way you do that is by picking a quarterback.
Yeah.
And that allows you some latitude within the structure. Look at Tennessee. Tennessee's had latitude, even though we don't know if Will Levis is any good, but there's hope with Will Levis.
Drake May, a minus 125 favorite to be the number 3 overall selection. J.J. McCarthy, plus 200. Jaden Daniels, plus 220. We will continue this draft conversation with Matt Manicharian, who joins us next of Sports Info Solutions. Get his thoughts on some of the big picture topics surrounding the draft coming up in just 10 days. We'll be right back on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Next Thursday, we will be officially underway with the NFL draft. Always such an exciting time of year. Can't believe that the countdown is down to 10 days as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. To get the latest on positional value, big storylines in the draft, we welcome in Matt Manicharian, a former NFL scout, senior VP of Sports Info Solutions. You can follow him on X at Matt Mano. Welcome in, Matt. How are we doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, of course, on the Progressive Guest Line. What to you is the most intriguing storyline right now with the draft so close by?
Oh, I think it's the race for number 2. Who's going to get that number 2 pick and then how things shake out from there. That top 10 is going to be very interesting. We might not see a defensive player come in the whole top 10. So I'm looking at that top, you know, the top of the draft.
And you don't think there could be a defensive player slip within there? And I know you have Drake May, I think, rated as the 7th ranked quarterback, or the 7th player in the draft, but you think it's all going to be offensive players in the top? None of those defensive linemen, maybe Latu or Turner or even Brian Murphy, the 3 technique from Texas, you don't think they could slip in?
I think Latu or Turner, I could see one of those two. I would put Turner slightly ahead in my book, but those are, I think, the two best defensive prospects that I could see going there. But really, when you look at, we're expecting probably 4 quarterbacks to go. I think 3 probably should. We're talking about 3 receivers that are going to go. You're going to have at least the tackle. I think the tight end should go, but you know, Steve, everybody wants to talk about positional value and you can't draft the tight end that high. So I really think it'll be, if a defensive player comes, it won't be until at least pick number eight.
Because you mentioned that at tight end, Brock Bowers, of course, like a very, very highly rated, a special talent, but all the talk specifically of him going 10 to the Jets when we know the people that they brought in on the offensive line are not exactly the stalwarts of health. What do you make of the thought process there if you're New York at 10?
Yeah, it's a pretty weird team building mind space to be in if you're with the Jets right now, right? You've given the keys to Rodgers in so many different ways, and you're trying to make it all in right now. So you're not really thinking about building for the future the way, you know, most team builders are sort of wired to constantly be thinking about things a few years out, especially when it pertains to the draft. I think the Jets are all in win now mode. And so I don't know if they can find an offensive lineman that they're going to feel great about starting this year above some of those free agent signings. I think they probably should. But again, coming back to it, if they're in full win now mode, a weapon like Bowers could make sense for them.
All right, let's say you become the head of the Patriots. You're picking three, and Daniels goes two, and Caleb Williams goes one. Who are you picking for the Patriots at three?
If I'm staying there and picking, I'm picking Drake May. For me, he's the second best quarterback in the draft, and I do think there's some risk with him, but I think the upside is tremendous. I think it's true win because of type upside. Like I would bet on with Williams, I don't know if I'd bet on it with May. There's a lot of uncertainty there. But I think he's got that upside that you can build the team around him. Now, the Patriots might have a little bit more in the way of that, especially on the offensive side of the ball, in terms of not just bringing in the quarterback and putting him in a position to fail. So I think there's a little bit of a give and take there.
I do find it interesting that you started that answer with if they pick at three, and there has been some speculation that they could trade down. We were just talking moments ago about how important it is for them to get a quarterback. Do you have a feel about what they might do at that position if they go quarterback or if they trade out of it?
Oh, I think there's a lot of uncertainty there. I think anybody that tells you they know what's going to happen there is probably lying. What do I think? I think they probably have a preference about some of these quarterbacks. They might have a much higher grade on a Daniels than a May or vice versa. I'd be afraid if I were them bringing in a JJ McCarthy there, because I think the cupboard really is bare on their offensive side. And I think he needs some more weapons around him to be able to sustain things. But I think you got to look at it. You've got to play by your board. You've got to see what the offer is potentially to be able to move down, right? If you're going to pick up from the Vikings, two first round picks this year and a first round pick next year, that's awfully attractive to me.
Yeah. How about, all right, so if you were a betting man and you could bet which quarterback will not go in the first round, Penix or Bo Nix, who you betting?
Oh, Nix. I'm betting Nix every day. I don't think Nix is really, I don't particularly think either of them is a first round type prospect if you're really trusting the grading scale. But we know quarterbacks get elevated, as they should. With Penix, I haven't seen the medicals, so I don't know the answers there. That might be a limiting factor for him. If I'm betting on it, I think if the medical's clear, I would feel comfortable saying he's going to go in the first round because there's enough love for him and the way he can push the ball down the field. When it comes to Nix, I don't see a first-day prospect. I think, kind of like McCarthy going as early as he's likely to go, I think you really got to talk yourself into Bo Nix in a way that I'm not comfortable with. I think that the ceiling is maybe like Daniel Jones. And anyway, if we're trying to win the Super Bowl, I don't know if you can bring in a quarterback like that and expect him to be able to elevate you there.
Matt Manicharian of Sports Info Solutions, former NFL scout, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. And so, okay, with that, because we talk about the potential for teams reaching for quarterbacks, there's a lot of narratives out there that we call lying season, trying to decipher what's true and what's not. What's been like the biggest lie or the biggest narrative that you disagree with throughout this draft process so far?
I think somewhere along the line, the narrative changed to being Jaden Daniels, good prospect on the next level, to Jaden Daniels, clearly the number two quarterback coming out here. So I don't know when we crossed that bridge exactly, and I'm still skeptical of it. I'm still not sure who the Commanders are going to take at number two. It'll certainly be either May or Daniels, but it feels like the public decided at some point kind of recently that Daniels is the guy. And I don't know that that's based on anything. It might be based on putting these kids on the board and seeing how they perform and really understanding more about them. And then that leaking out, but it's just as likely that it's the other way around, and that they're almost spreading rumors to set themselves up.
And, all right, let's talk my favorite subject, the wide receivers, because God knows there's 50 of them that could be number one receivers in the draft. So how close do you have Harrison and Neighbors and Odunze rated in terms of how you see them going?
Yeah, so, I mean, in terms of our grades, you're looking at the fourth and fifth players on our overall vertical board when you talk about Neighbors and Odunze in that order. Number one in terms of the grade is Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't know if that means you take him number one. I think certainly you've got a Caleb Williams. We've got a 7-0 grade on him. I'm more interested in that, you know, almost over almost anything else if you have a chance of that type of a player. But I think that Harrison really is as good a receiver prospect as I've seen since probably the A.J. Green and Julio Jones years. I think he's really special. Size, the productivity. You don't know where to start and end in terms of all the good traits that he has. Is it special speed like Tyreek Hill? No. Is it elite speed in and out of breaks? I'm not sure he's quite that, but for a 6'4 guy, it's pretty ridiculous what he's got going on there. So I think he's in his own league as a prospect. Any position is here, he's probably the best player in the draft. But then, you know, Neighbors and Odunze are up there on the board for a reason. I'm not saying draft them that high, because when you make a choice to draft receivers, you know that when you get to day three of the draft, you're going to be staring at your board full of running backs and receivers, and you're not going to have any answers to fill your holes at offensive line or at defensive line. So I think you've got to be careful about positional scarcity there and how you think about that. But in terms of the quality of those players, especially when it comes to Harrison, I think they're awfully good receivers as far as prospects go.
Well, with Harrison being so high on your board, then how wide or slim would you say the gap is then from him down to Neighbors or Odunze?
I think that Neighbors and Odunze have potential to be Pro Bowl caliber players. I'd bet on Neighbors a touch ahead of Odunze. I think he's just got more of that true explosive speed, whereas Odunze relies a little bit more on his body to get things done. But, I mean, we're splitting hairs between these two guys, I think. For Harrison, to me, I think it's a true number one. It's an elite type of prospect. It's a blue chipper every year, no matter what. And somebody that you can build your offense around in a lot of ways, you know, the way that the Vikings are looking to with Justin Jefferson now and sort of most likely a rookie quarterback. So I think Harrison, it's very hard, you know, when you do the deductive reasoning. Michael used to talk to us about being Sherlock Holmes when we were scouting. When you do the deductive reasoning, it's hard to find ways that Harrison fails. And that's quite a prospect when you have somebody that's on that level across the board with their traits.
And would you agree that all these quarterbacks, and Caleb, there's a chance of failure in all of them?
Of course. The draft community, the worst thing that people do, whether it's on the team side or on the public side, is the over-certainty about everything, right? Half of these quarterbacks are going to bust. That's how it goes. So we can keep talking ourselves into them. People say, why is the NFL so bad at making their projections of quarterbacks? Well, because there aren't 32 of them. If there were 32 good ones, we'd all look really good in terms of projecting them, because we wouldn't be reaching for guys like this. But, you know, it's the nature of the beast. You got to find them. And so you pump them up a little bit. And at the end of the day, even when you have special talent like Caleb Williams, it could go either way. It always, for human beings.
Great work, Matt.
Awesome insight. Great Thanks work, so Matt. Much, Matt.
Great
Appreciate
job,
you.
Buddy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Matt Manicharian. Make sure you check out everything at Sports Info Solutions. They're partnered with the 33rd team. A ton of great content coming out. And follow him on X at Matt Mano. We'll be right back wrapping things up on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN. When you do, new customers who bet $5 get $200 instantly in bonus bets. That's the code VSIN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. We have the NBA play-in games upon us over the course of the next 2 days. The WNBA draft. draft tonight. So Caitlin Clark expected to go number one overall to the Fever. We've got the Boston Marathon today. The Masters is wrapped up. Like, there is so this is a very underrated time on the sports calendar. We have a ton going on right now.
Yeah, with the NBA coming in, you know, now we'll get to see it. You know, players, there's no more load management days. Guys are going to show, so we're going to get the chance to really see that. The West is fun. I mean, there's a lot of good teams out West. Two of the youngest teams, Minnesota and Oklahoma, one, you know, and Denver's still going to hold on to their title. So there's a lot going on. I mean, it's fun. The Boston Marathon used to capture the day. I mean, you know, it's a beautiful day here in the Northeast, so they, at least they get a good day to run. And sometimes that thing is snowbound.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. That is not for me. I don't do with the weather very well. But we talked about it earlier. It's Jackie Robinson Day. We have the NFL draft just a couple weeks away, less than 2 weeks away now. And with that, this time of year on the calendar in the NFL, we have all the voluntary workouts getting underway. Over the course of the last 2 weeks, mm-hmm. It was those teams with new coaches. They're allowed to have the head start. The rest of the team starting things out this week. And I did find it interesting, Michael, because a couple of marquee wide receivers, Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb, who are looking to get contracts this offseason, were not at the start of their voluntary workouts. And so, of course, it's making headlines. But we were talking about it in the commercial break. This time of year, if you're there or if you're not, it's not a very impactful thing unless you have a new head coach, right?
Well, exactly right. Unless there's a new coach you're trying to impress. I mean, this is the first 3 weeks are all weights and getting in condition. There's no, you can have an hour meeting and that's it. So there's very little time with the players. There's very little, you know, there's no on the field. It's all strength and conditioning. And for a team like San Francisco, which their players came in today, you kind of want to build this thing gradually. Here we are, April 15th. We also forgot to mention it's tax day, Stormy. Yeah. You got to pay your taxes. I saw Mark Cuban.
I got ahead of that,
send
Michael.
His tax bill in. Good for you. Good for you. So anyway, you know, I think to me, it's you got to build gradually into it. What you want to be able to do is spend more time on fundamentals and techniques. And guys like Jefferson or Tua or Brandon Ayuk, they don't really need to be in, right? They don't need to be in because if they're working out, then that's fine. They can work out on their own program and get in condition. Eventually, they need to get in for the OTA days and all that so you can get some of that flow going back. But to me, we make way too much out of guys not coming to OTAs. I think it's important. You want team unity. But if some player wants to hold out as a show of protest, it's really no protest.
Mm-hmm. And what we said earlier, too, it's important with the new coaches, but that's just because they're trying to establish their message and begin a new culture, all those types of things.
Yep. Yeah. Like Jim Harbaugh, he wants to build a culture. So he needs everybody engaged, right? He needs to figure out who he can count on and who he can't. And he needs to watch the weight program. He needs to go in the weight room and see who's trying to cut a corner, who's not working hard, who's trying to just get through, who's putting in the motion and not putting in the effort. Those are all important, you know. Whereas if you're Andy Reid, you've played a long season, right? You're Kyle Shanahan, you've played a long season, right? You need rest. You need your guys to kind of just chill a little bit, because what I don't think fans realize is the longer you go into the season, the more practices you end up playing like an extra year half the time because you're in the playoffs so many years. So I think to me, that's why you don't want to kind of go over fast. What you have to do is develop those young guys, and you need time to do it.
While we're waiting to see what happens with the Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb contracts, a couple contracts did get done over the last couple days. Devontae Smith gets a 3-year, $75 million extension with 51 guaranteed. And Colts D tackle DeForest Buckner, a 2-year, $46 million extension. That interesting with the Colts, because we talked so much a couple weeks ago about Chris Ballard and the importance that he stressed on re-signing the players that he feels are really talented already in the building. The Colts have now signed 10 of their own players to new deals this offseason.
Yeah, and it's really the Colts season. I hate to say this to Elliot. It's going to come down to one guy, Gus Bradley. Can Gus Bradley run a system of defense that complicates the opponent? Or is he going to be soft against the run for a dome team? Are they going to have enough power to handle it? I mean, last year they struggled. They gave up a lot of yards. They played better. They're 11th best red zone team in the league. But for the most part, when they needed to play man-to-man, when they needed to get off the field, when they needed to lock down an opposing team and rush the passer, it wasn't there. This whole scheme that Bradley runs is conducive to the front. Buckner's a big part of that. That worked out for them, right? San Francisco didn't want to pay Buckner. They drafted Kinlaw. Kinlaw couldn't replace him. They got a really good player in exchange for a first-round pick who's played through the contract and has gotten another one. So good for them. But this season's going to come down to the Colts is this draft. They're going to need to get a few players in this draft to add to their team because they've re-signed everybody from their team, but they're going to have to change what they do. And we're going to learn from whether Shane Steichen is a head coach or if he is just an assistant coach who's wearing the head coaching title. Because I know he's best friends with Gus Bradley, but he needs more out of Gus Bradley. You know, we always say this all offseason. The players got to improve. I don't think there's anybody on Indianapolis's Colts team that needs to improve more than Gus Bradley.
Okay, I love it. And then to the Eagles side of it, the Devonta Smith contract. Yeah. I mean, another big contract. You think Landon Dickerson and the huge deal that he signed, Jordan Mailata as well, and now Devonta Smith.
And then Barkley too, right?
They paid him exactly.
And Hurts last year and Dallas got it. I mean, just think about it. Mailata, he's one of the highest paid offensive line. Lane Johnson's one of the highest paid, maybe the highest, right? Dickerson's the highest paid guard. A.J. Brown's the third highest paid wide receiver. Parker got paid. Barkley's a one. And the quarterback's a high paid player. So clearly what this tells you is they're going to go defense in the draft, right? I mean, there's really no position that they're going to fill on offense in the draft. So you're going to see them draft defensive linemen, defensive linemen and corners. They need corners badly. And so with Slay and Bradbury being over in age, I think this is really what they're going to look to do. And if they could trade up to get the corner that they want, I wouldn't be surprised if they did that.
Okay, another headline that I didn't get the chance to ask you about since you were out on Friday, but like we're not going to play the audio because I think everybody's heard it by now over the weekend. What did you make of the comments from Tom Brady when he was asked on that podcast about whether or not if he got a call with all the injuries that have happened in the NFL this past year at the quarterback position, if he got a call this coming season, if he'd be willing to come back? And he says, oh, I'm not opposed to it.
Well, I mean, but he can't because he's involved in ownership. Like, it's not a realistic question. So, like, whoever asked it should have followed up by, well, what would happen with your Vegas stuff? You're going to acquiesce to that? Like, to me, it's like it's just one of these things that get dangled out there as a story, but there's no facts to the question. Tom, if you had a chance to play, can you by league rule be involved in an ownership group and still continue to play? That's the question. Now, how he answers that is the interesting thing.
Now, it's a barbershop podcast, so Vic Blends of the Deep Cut. You know, I don't anticipate knowing the intricate details behind the scenes of what's going on there, but I'm with you. It's funny because he's been working so hard to get ownership in the Raiders that you know that this isn't realistic if that were to go through. But also just from an ownership standpoint, they're not going to vote to let him play if he's an owner. And so you would know the logistics behind this more. Does it have to be unanimous? Is it 2/3 votes? What would it have to be? I mean, and the Raiders aren't going to let him play for someone else.
Of course not. It's not even practical. Plus, he's not even the owner yet. If he has to get approved by 2/3 of the owners to become in the group.
Yeah.
And so, like, I just don't see how that would be even possible. I have to check. Is he on the reserve retire list for Tampa? I don't think he is. I think he's a free agent. But that neither here nor there. I mean, at the end of the day, you can't be an owner and then go play.
All I took away from it is somebody doesn't sound particularly excited to go be the top analyst at Fox right now. If you're already like, I wouldn't be opposed to coming back and playing. And he can be 47 years old, too.
Yeah, I mean, right. I mean, but, you know, like, look, I think he's going to be great in the booth. I really do. I'm excited to see him in that booth. But I think to me, at some point, you got to not answer that question, right? Because every time you answer it in just a little bit of a different way, everybody's going to take it as he wants to come back. But it's impractical. There's no way he can come back.
When we were with Mike Palm on the program on Friday, he was funny. He was like, it just feels like one of those cases where Tom Brady has always been in the spotlight. He's not in the spotlight right now. So maybe making one of those comments to have him be making headlines again. So I thought it was funny. I had to ask the man with all of the Patriots and Tom and Belichick connections to see what your thoughts were on it. Great stuff, as always, my friend. We got through this show fast and it's a Monday. I feel like usually Mondays are supposed to be like that day that is boring and slow. Not for us on the Lombardi Line, pal.
Thank you, Stormy. Awesome day. I'll see you tomorrow. We'll be ready to go again tomorrow.
Yep.
Then we're closing in on the draft. 9 to go. It's like Christmas.
Beautiful. Have a great day, everybody. Enjoy Sharp Money coming up next.